Good afternoon and welcome everyone to the Bus and Rail Subcommittee meeting today on Monday, June 12th. To begin with, please note that this meeting is being recorded and the meeting audio will be placed on our website, which is wmata.com. I would like to share a few helpful tips for people joining via phone calls. You can press *6 to mute or unmute yourself. If you would like to make comments, you can virtually raise or lower hands by pressing *9. Everyone who is on the video call, you can click on the speaker icon to mute or unmute yourself. And if you're under reactions, you can click on the raise hand icon that will raise and lower your virtual hands. If you are able to use these tools, it will be very helpful for us because then we would know that somebody is trying to make comments and we can have one person at a time. Currently, everybody would be on mute, so I would appreciate if you stay on mute unless speaking, because it helps eliminate any external noise. So in advance, thank you. as you may know, we do have American Sign Language interpreters with us on this meeting. Therefore, when speaking, please state your name before your comments. This helps them in doing their job well. It also helps everyone on the phone calls knowing who the speaker is. So we will, Chair Kalabia, if you'd like, we can go through the roll call and then read the meeting agenda.
Sure, please.
Okay, great. So I would go ahead and read out the names of the AAC members. When I call out your name, please confirm your presence. Azhar Atura, Darnese Bush, Tino Kalabia.
Present.
Thank you. Vanessa Coles. Rico Dancy.
Yes, present.
Thank you. Tawan Farmer. For the record, Tawan had joined and he informed that he will be rejoining in just a few minutes. Deborah Fisher.
I'm here.
Thank you. Marcy Goldstein.
Present.
Thank you. Timothy Howard. Steve Caffin.
Present. Present.
Thank you.
Sure.
Philippa Mazzell.
Present.
Thank you. Sandy Newsom.
Present.
Thank you. Phil Posner.
Oh, present. Love that necklace. Are those opals?
Sorry, I didn't hear.
I said present and I love your necklace. Are those opals?
Thank you. Yes. Doris Ray. Denise Rush.
Present.
Thank you. Paul Semelford. Patrick Sheehan. Kelly Simonow.
Hey, Anu, I'm here. Couldn't get off mute fast enough.
Thank you, Patrick.
Thank you.
Kelly Simonow. And Philip Weintraub. Okay, that concludes.
I don't know if you call my name, but I'm Thomas. Present, Thomas Mangum.
Okay, yes, I had, thank you.
I know this is Vanessa. My computer wouldn't let me unmute, but I am here. Okay, I'm on my phone.
Thank you, Vanessa. I'll mark you present. Mm-hmm. All right, so that concludes the roster for today. I will continue to look out for any AAC members who may be joining later on. All right, now going through the agenda for today's meeting, I will share my screen so that it's visible on my screen as well. So bear with me for a quick moment. Okay. We just went through the roll call of the committee members. As soon as I finish reading the agenda, Chair Calabia will go through the motion of reviewing and approving today's meeting agenda and last month's meeting minutes. Afterwards, we have Lynn Bowersox with us, and we may have other team members joining. I have not had a chance to go through all the participants yet, so if we have any members who have already joined, welcome. Lynn and the team will be discussing an update about the 8K railcar open gangway. Afterwards, we will have Nate Williams to give us information about summer 2023 rail service outages. At 5:20, we have Mitch Nietzsche and Ronaldo Grimaldi to give us information about elevator escalators announcements, basically elevator announcements, and to talk about the DuPont Circle project. At 5:45, we will take any public comments, and the meeting is scheduled to adjourn at 6 p.m. Now I would stop sharing my screen. And Chair Calabia, at this point, I would ask for you to move the meeting forward. You have the floor.
Yes, please do. Could you bring up your screen and show the agenda again?
Okay, sure.
Is the first item, Lynn?
Yes, that is correct.
Okay. Welcome, Lynn. Good to see you again.
Thank you. You as well. And thank you for your messages in the meantime. Today, I just wanted to talk to the group about the exhibit that we hosted at Gallery Place on the 8000 series rail cars, and to talk about the next steps in our design process. So first, may I just ask, is anyone on the meeting call? Did anybody get to Gallery Place to see the exhibit?
I did.
Oh, great. What was your impression, Mr. Chairman?
Well, Tino, since I had done a lot of homework on this and then traveled up to New York with you, it was not exactly new to me. Being able to feel the texture of things was obviously new. Other than that, I wasn't taken by surprise for sure.
Good. Okay. So a number of my colleagues aren't on the call today because they're actually with Hitachi doing some spec work. But I will make this brief because my colleagues, Nate and Mitch, have really big agenda items for you guys today. But let me just say this. Thanks to the hard work of this group, the feedback that we got from customers at those exhibits over the couple of weeks that we hosted them at Gallery Place was phenomenal. The rate of positive feedback was pretty unprecedented for us. The customers are really excited about the new design, and they especially liked the open gangway concept. They especially liked the differentiation between wheelchair and then dedicated space for wheelchairs and then dedicated space for strollers, luggage, and bicycles. So all of the things that you all gave us input into really resulted in great customer support for some of those design changes. And so we're moving ahead with a final design recommendation to the general manager this week, and we'll make that public next week. We'll go through it at the board meeting. So much of, as Tino just said so accurately, much of what you see will not surprise you because you all had so much input into it all along that, you know, it's really a result of your recommendations. The one thing you will see in our final presentation is that we're still working very much with you on the inner car barriers. So what we've committed to is bringing back an inner car barrier to actually show it to you, to get, you know, your first hand touch and feel of that before we move forward with the newly designed inner car barrier. We know how important that is. We know it's important to get it right. So there'll be some next iterations of that. And then what will happen next is once we get through this with Hitachi, they will come back with an actual scale mock-up of the car for us to see. So this phase of the process is coming to a close. And I just wanted to say thank you to all of you who traveled with us, who have sat through these communications, who've emailed us, who've asked us questions. It's been such a help to us in terms of getting something that the customers are really excited about. So, Mr. Chairman, I turn it back over to you for questions.
Since we last met, Sandy Neusel, our second vice chair, has, I guess, amplified some of her remarks regarding the safety barriers. Sandy, you're on. You're here, I know. Would you like to comment on that again?
Yes. Hi. This is Sandy Neusel. I just want to be sure that there will be consistency between for the inter-car barriers, open gangway, and between other cars. And at the last BRS meeting, Lynn, you mentioned pantograph, inter-car barrier where there's not an open gangway. And I was wondering if there's any mock-up of that, any visual, or do we have to wait until, do we still need to wait to see that, or has that evolved to something else? Because Steve Caffin has mentioned that he has seen an inter-car barrier that has been used on open gangway that can also be used between cars that do not have an open gangway connection.
Yeah, so I'm sorry, Sandy, go ahead.
Yeah, so any thoughts? I'll go on mute.
We don't have a mock-up yet. We don't have a sample, but we're working towards that. And Dave Souter in the vehicle engineering group is working to get us one, and we'll be able to see it. I don't have a date for you yet, but he's working with the vendor.
Lynn, we mentioned this the last time that you folks were with us. And I thought David said that they weren't going to use the pantograph.
So the pantograph is more of it's a style, right? So the one that we're contemplating is the four strap that has the strap along the bottom that sort of meets the platform, which is what we've heard people would prefer. I don't know that he's ruled out the more crisscross style as a possibility if we don't like the option that he's pursuing.
Okay, well, I had mentioned that the last time he was with us, and for people who are not familiar with it, pantographs are like the folding gates that parents put at the top of stairs, so children don't try and go down or fall through. They kind of collapse and expand. But if that's what he and I were both talking about, I think he mentioned that they wouldn't be using pantograph. But we, of course, all be interested in seeing what you all are working on now.
Okay.
Let me also mention that our first vice chair sent some photos from Munich, where he was in recent weeks. And those include accordion style security barriers, which seem pretty close to the edge of the platform.
Okay.
Let's see, would you want to comment on that, Steve? Steve, are you? I guess we've lost him because of his being in Iceland. But anyway, I'll try and...
Here we are. Can you hear me?
I asked about the photos you had sent.
Oh, I heard. Yeah. I heard. I just couldn't find the mute button quickly and unmute. Yes. Lynn, I don't know if you were on the mailing where I sent through pictures from I think it was at Munich.
It was Munich.
And I'm not sure whether you're on the mailing, but
This is the one that came at 3:30
today.
What was
interesting about Munich is their new cars did an effective job. Their old cars pretty much did what we currently have, which is, and you know, by looking at the different cars, you could see the great difference. And the important thing is that the barrier go to the very bottom of the car. And, you know, it doesn't have to be all the way to the top, but it's that bottom area. And what I think you and I and Sandy like about this style is that it's it can also be used not only for gangway cars, but also for non-gangway cars, because we'll continue to have, you know, many series of non-gangway cars out there. And this is a basic attachment. So look, what one more item into the pot, Lynn.
Thank you.
If you didn't get that email, okay, I profess to not being a professional when it comes to design. And so this is just one offering from what I've seen that seems to be pretty effective.
Thank you. I'll have, Tino, if you like, I'll have Dave circle back with the group as soon as we have a date and a sample.
Okay.
Share.
Thomas Mangrum is with us. And Thomas, do you want to bring up the question of the central pole again? Thomas?
Yeah, the poles on the trains, they're right there at the door as you open up the door, what have you. And during rush hour, nobody gonna wanna move away to let wheelchairs or scooters onto the train. Cause they're right there at the door, they're not pulled away from the door like you got the poles pulled away from the door now, where our trains that we use now. They're right there. You know, so you open up the door, there's a pole at all three entrances of the train. So don't rush out, it's not gonna work. Not gonna work for us. It's hardly working for us now. It's it, but still we're able to get on, what have you. But we're not gonna be able to get on that one at all during rush hour. That was my concern. Thank you.
I think David mentioned that the pole would be not where the station is for wheelchairs and luggage and such, but they would be at a different place. Carol also commented on this last time. Carol, do you want to speak here at the...
Well, I just noted that even in New York, the wheelchair locations, that pole was not centered on the door near the wheelchair locations. That's what I had noted. It was centered on the door on the other locations, because in New York, they don't have seats, they have benches on the side, so you can go around it. I just reiterated what Thomas Mangrum was saying to me while we were there. I think that there may be a way of moving the pole to the side so that it won't interfere with the wheelchair location. And I think that that's something that perhaps was discussed. In New York, the doors are wider than the ones here. So it's easier to get it around those poles when they're centered. So that it's different. It's slightly different situation, I think.
But we got to have the poles so if during rush hour and people standing there holding on to the pole, they're not in a way of a wheelchair getting on. Because I can't imagine they're going to want to move to let us on there. They don't want to move to let us on there now. So so I can't see them doing that with the poles right there. As soon as the door opens, you run right into the pole. The pole's right there. So they got to be moved somehow. Thank you. That's Thomas.
Lynn, apart from the question of security barriers and poles, the New York model we saw will have much wider doors to enter and exit. You have mentioned that we wouldn't be changing the size of the doors in our 8000 series?
That's right.
How is that? I mean, why can't we?
So for a few reasons, the location and opening and closing of the doors is, we're trying to create a standard, at least for now, so that we can contemplate the platform screen doors at a later date. The standardization will make that easier to do. Also, the wider doors would take an extraordinary amount of longer design time and cost this late in the process. So we made a judgment to continue down the path that we're on at this time. And knowing that we have some options in the future if we need to make that change later. But at this point in time, preserving that opportunity to go to the platform screen doors seems like an overwhelming consideration.
So it's pretty certain that we will eventually have platform screen doors. They seem immensely expensive to retrofit into our stations.
So it would be subject to fund availability for sure.
Yes. Let me mention that Hitachi has built open gangways in many other cities. Do they think it's overly expensive to widen ours, as they may have wider doors in other open gangways trains they built?
Yeah, those are different contracts, different specs, different processes.
May I add something, Tino, if you don't mind, Lynn? Wider doors do have consequences. I don't know if you recall when we were in New York, the doors have to slide into the wall of the trains, and yeah, then you end up with a little tiny window in between doors. And whereas our trains are very open and they have a lot of windows, and which creates a very friendly atmosphere, I believe. And people don't put a lot of value on how something makes you feel. But as an architect, I think that when you're riding a train and you have all these windows and you're able to see outside and you're able to orient yourself of where you're going, even if you have low vision, it makes your transportation better. So just making the doors wider, I think it will take away more seating, which we do have to have. We can't just do what they did in New York, because we have a different clientele. We our customers ride long ways all the way from Dulles downtown. It's a long ride if you're standing and you don't have a place to sit or a comfortable place to sit. Lynn, you didn't mention about the reactions you had about the seating in the sample at Gallery Place. I happened to be there, and I thought it was a comfortable seat. And that's an opinion I'd like to share, because I think that I listen to concerns from customers all the time, and I'm just voicing it from that perspective.
Just go back to the question of the size of doors and how New York's trains would have smaller windows. you know, Carol, really, after a while, commuters don't, many of them are on their phones or on newspapers, or they're in tunnels. They're not waiting for take your breath away sights from the windows. That's a secondary concern. More important is how fast the train is. The wider doors allow for quicker access and exit. And so you reduce the downtime. I think customers are more interested in getting somewhere faster than in waiting for the next breathless sight they can see from a picture. So I would discount that argument entirely. The fact that more people could get in quicker is also helped by the fact that the open gangway's interior tube will also possibly increase up to 10% the number of passengers that could be accommodated. I think we're looking for more passengers to get in and more passengers to move more quickly, not necessarily to be able to stare at a few windows that are not in the tunnel. Lynn, do you want to comment on what she had just added?
Well, I think one of the most important points that Carol said is one of the considerations we did hear from customers, which is about the number of seats. And so a wider door would cost you some seating. And there is concern about the ratio of seating and standing, especially from the longer distance customers. So we do have to weigh all those factors.
Okay.
Tino, this is Sandy. Can I also interject?
Sandy, may I just say that we do have 6 members?
Okay, so. I'll wait.
Thank you. Chair Calabria, did you want to?
We should take the people who's raised their hands.
So in this order, Denise Rush, followed by Phil Posner. And as you go on, I'll continue to read the names. So Ms. Rush, go ahead, followed by Dr. Posner.
Okay, this is Denise Rush. I did participate and go down to Gallery Place, but I couldn't get unmuted when you asked the question. From a blind person's opinion, I tried to get over to the seat to sit on it, but it wouldn't allow me, the demonstration wouldn't allow me to get over there. So I only touched the seat. I didn't get to sit on it. And because I'm blind, I could not see. I didn't get the experience of, I was told where the wheelchair is supposed to go. It was described to me what they showed, but the demonstration at Gallery Place didn't inform me of anything that I didn't already get from the AAC. To the public, they didn't attend the AAC meetings, so they had a different, you know, it was new news to them, and they were looking at the video that they had, but from a blind person's view, I didn't learn anything, I didn't touch anything, and I didn't feel anything that was new to me other than what I had heard from the members who attended in New York. So, and like I said, I didn't know where the wheelchair is supposed to go. I couldn't feel where the wheelchair is supposed to go, but I did attend the gallery demonstration.
Well, thank you, Ms. Rush. And Mrs. Lynn, I think one thing we'll try to do differently and better is when we get the soft mock-up, the scale sample of the new design, we get that on the property, we'll have a special opportunity for the AAC to come and experience that separate from the customers. And, you know, we'll try to make sure that we have something that's more accessible for you.
All right, thank you.
Right. Next.
Thank you, Ms. Rush. This is Anu. Dr. Paulson, go ahead.
Yes, thank you. Everything looks great. Something not commented yet. The entrance doors, the 7000 series, have those lights at the bottom. And we have mentioned it before. You couldn't see it in the mock-up, but they are blinding. They need to be of a low enough lumen so that when you're getting in, they're not blind coming from the platform into the car and then sitting in the car. The other thing on the 7000 series, there's a step as you come in. It's a lip on the bottom part of the door, which on occasion is difficult for manual wheelchairs to get over and for people with foot drop to get over. And the lip was put there for drainage. But there is a problem in getting in. And historically, some of the questions about the size of the doors and the poles, there were discussions that were had on the 7000 and 6000 series cars, and they were structural issues. The reason the doors are smaller than originally contemplated, and the reason the poles are placed where the poles are placed, were an engineering issue for structure. Because the car is made of lightweight material. And in order to support it, those poles are very important. And the location of the poles, again, it's the engineers put them in the most supportive location. And the same thing with the entranceway. The larger the door, the more fragile the structure of the car is. So that's all I had to add. But the lighting and that little foot lip is really important to those with foot drops and manual wheelchairs. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Dr. Posner. This is Anu. Darnese Henry, followed by Philippa Mazel. So Darnese, go ahead.
I wanted to say I agree with Carol in terms of not having the doors any larger and maintaining the number of windows, because it acts to ensure people that are claustrophobic that it's more open than it actually is. And I think that you'll have problems because a lot of people are claustrophobic, and if it looks dark instead of light, and people wouldn't move or whatever, they would be more hesitant to move away from the door. When I use a chair, when I get on the door, come on the door, I always announce myself, wheelchair coming in, and then people sort of move out of the way. You have to do that, otherwise you won't be able to get in and people won't move out of the way. So that's something that you always have to do, broadcast that you're coming on and make sure that you don't feel claustrophobic, because usually the standing passengers will move out of the way, but only if you let them know that you're coming on.
Next.
Thank you, Darnese. Philippa Mazel, followed by Steve Kaffin and Sandy Newsom. So Philippa, go ahead.
Okay, good afternoon, everyone. I literally just got back in town just as the meeting was starting. I don't want to be insensitive to other people's issues, but I support the windows because as a person with low vision, I can't see the little sign that's inside telling me what the next stop is. Those windows are crucial to being able to see the sign on the walls, as you know, when you pull into the station that tells me what station I'm in. So if there's just one little window, which I saw in New York and did not like at all, I liked ours better with all the nice windows. It's not just about seeing scenery or anything. It's, for me, it's about seeing that sign, because your enunciators don't always work. And there may be snafus. I know we're getting new cars, but there may be snafus. And I would be dependent on seeing that sign on the wall. I can't even see the one on the platform, but I can see the one on the wall. And the windows allow me to do that.
Thank you, Philippa. Steve Kaffin, followed by Sandy Newsel, and then Doris Ray. Steve, go ahead.
Okay, thank you. Lynn, let me just ask the three questions together. It may be most efficient. I recall in a prior discussion, the seats were going to have a curve in them. And I was wondering whether that's still the case. And I'm a little concerned because different people's bodies are different. And we don't want to create, I haven't seen a curve in in another metro before. And so so my question is if it's still there and is that still under consideration? Because, you know, we can risk some unhappy people if that curve isn't to their particular body measurements. The second thing I want to say is, have you considered with the poles the multi handles that many of the new systems are putting in, instead of just that one pole having maybe three or four kind of handles on that pole that permit easily people to grab without kind of fighting with each other? And the third question I have is, for the open space at the doors where a full crowd of people wind up pushing and shoving because there's nothing to hold on to, there's an open space and there's often a pole, a silver colored pole. What I've seen is instead of that pole, which is very difficult to lean on or hold on, I've seen kind of a cushion where people just in effect lean against. It seems to hold more people and and with less movement. So those are my questions. Thank you.
Sure, thanks. Let me try to respond to all three. So the lumbar support, which you refer to as the curve in the seat, is going to remain. They have been popular with customers, not every customer. I grant you that not every customer is the same size and enjoys the lumbar support in the same way, but overall, the customers like the lumbar support. I will also tell you that one of the things we're looking to do to make our fleet sustainable, cost-effective, is to limit the number of seat types that we have. So having a standard seat type that, you know, we can use reduces the inventory and the supplies that we need and keeps the costs down for running Metro service. On the multi-handles, yes, the new expansion handle that we have does have multiple prongs. So you can hold it from different directions and not everybody's using a single handhold. And on the open space at the door crowding situation with the leaning bar cushion, I do not believe that's in the current design, but it is something that I will look back at to make sure, because at one point I had seen something that looked like maybe in the area where we had the bicycles and the luggage and the strollers, that there was something like that. I don't know whether it was a handhold bar, a leaning post, but it may be that there is something along those lines. So I have to look back and see where we landed on that.
Lynn, I have a picture of an example of that if you'd like me to send that to you in a few days.
Of course, that would be great. Thank you.
Sure. Thank you.
Thank you, Steve. This is Anu. Sandy Musil, and then Doris Ray. So Sandy, go ahead.
This is Sandy. On the windows, I had the immediate reaction when we were in the cars in New York that the windows were smaller. And I, like Philippa, use looking out the window at the wall on Metro to see the largest possible lettering on signage. I commend Metro for having multiple kinds of signage and announcements for the stations, but I, like Philippa, rely on the looking out the windows at the wall to see what station I'm at. Thank you.
Doris?
Hi, yes. I want to echo what was said. I use actually windows to check on what station I'm arriving at, and not necessarily because the severity of my vision impairment at this point. Not necessarily, well, I don't even think mostly I've never used it for the signs, but because many people with vision impairments navigate by landmark, I can look out the windows and see where I am, and it is a very important. Wanted to say that. I also want to express concerns that, number one, there be enough poles. I'm not talking about their location, but enough poles that are vertical that to use to navigate in the train, particularly when it's moving. Sometimes you need to, frequently you need to get to the door for other people in order not to get in a jam up trying to get out of a train. And for seniors and people with disabilities, that's important and really not much in favor of straps hanging from the ceiling, as I consider when I've used them that they're unsafe and very... it's an endangerment to injuring your back when you have any kind of back condition. And so I think that's about it. I fear that I've missed one thing, but I want to say just in the whole design of the train as a whole, I would like to put in the comment that we need to retain the exterior message windows that tell us what color the train is and its destination. So that's about it. Oh, I know what the other thing was. The other thing was I am most concerned about people as you're navigating through the aisles. Whether it's in the gangway or someplace else, I'm concerned about people having bikes and strollers on the trains. That people with vision impairments might miss for whatever reason. Their cane doesn't detect it or something else, and being a hazard. Right now, a lot of people aren't bringing their bicycles on the trains that I have seen, and I don't think we should. Thank you.
This is Anu. Thank you, Doris. Chair Calabia, back to you.
I didn't have my hand up.
Okay. How would you like to proceed further in the meeting?
Well, Lynn, if you have any final comments, we thank you for coming again.
Well, thank you. These conversations are always very helpful to me in terms of understanding the concerns of the committee and the subcommittee. And I just want to pledge that we will continue to include you as we go forward in the design process. And again, get your thoughts and look at any follow-up emails and, you know, make sure that we have an accessible opportunity for you all to see the soft mock-up when it comes and to comment on that so that we can make final tweaks when that opportunity is presented to us by Hitachi. So I just really thank you all very much.
Lynn, just one thing about Hitachi. Since they built numerous open gang trains, can any photos they've made of the finished products that they've delivered elsewhere be shared with us so we can see the variety of models that they've successfully built?
Oh, sure. I will ask, are you interested only in transit? They're about to launch the train. It's in Honolulu, is Hitachi developed and built and operated and maintained train system. So if you're interested in that, I think they're about to do something very big there. I'll get that for you. If not, most of the transit systems that they build cars for are European, I'd be happy to get those as well.
Yes, in fact, Honolulu's is going to be opening theirs on June 30th, and they'll have a free passage through the July 4th weekend. I think Hitachi has also done a recent one. I don't know if it's completed yet in Saudi Arabia, but that's the extent of the variety of places that they've built trains. So if we could see some photos of successfully complete trains from various cities that Hitachi has made, and then maybe we could have some comments from those too.
Okay, great.
Well, in the meanwhile, Lynn, thank you very much. And we look forward to you again.
Thank you. And I appreciate all of your time. Have a great afternoon.
You too. Bye-bye.
All right, Chair Calabia. Next, we have Nate Williams to talk about summer 2023 rail service outages. So Nate, if you would come off of mute and the floor is yours.
Hello, everyone.
Hello.
How are you? Andy asked me to fill in for him to discuss the summer 2023 outages. And as you all know, we had four variations. We had a single track that concluded in mid-May, on May 22nd, and we are now in the first phase of the Orange Line Boston to Vienna and McLean shutdown that will conclude at the end of June, opening the Silver Line up to the rest of the system in time for the 4th of July weekend. As we do that, we will still have from Vienna to West Falls Church shut down with the West Falls Church station open. And in July, we will transition from the Orange Line shutdown to the Green Line shutdown, going from Fort Totten up to Greenville. Mm-hmm. So right now, again, we're halfway through the Orange Line. We're making great progress out there. We're trying to, one, not only make the rail safer to travel on, reduce the number of rail breaks by replacing all the rail out in the outdoor area, but we're also trying to upgrade our radio communication system as well. And things are progressing along pretty well.
Great. Are there any comments or questions from members? Anu,
Chair Calabria, this is Anu.
Yes.
And I just wanted to add that Andy Off was scheduled to present to come today and talk, you know, present the information, but he had a schedule conflict. So that's the reason we have Nate at this point. Ms. Rush, I see your hand is up. Go ahead.
Is was Andy going to talk about the elevators?
No, ma'am.
Oh, is somebody going to talk about the elevators?
Yes, we have Mitch Nietzsche and Ronaldo Grimaldi.
Well, my question is for the elevators, so I'll wait till they finish their presentation.
Okay, sure. So Nate Williams is here to share information about the current shutdown that we have on the Orange and part of the Orange and Silver Lines. Okay, Sandy, I see your hand is up, go ahead.
Although, this is Sandy Newsell. Although I have not ridden Silver and Orange Line since the shutdown began, I'm curious what the feedback is about the shuttle bus service getting people past the shutdown area. I've heard one person say going from Vienna to Roslyn worked fine. I've heard somebody else say that something didn't work fine. I've heard Washington Post articles saying terribly long waits. What's the overall sense that Metro has about how smoothly the shuttle buses are working?
To be honest, we've had some conversations about it. Right now, we are reworking the system. I believe because of the increase in ridership from the Silver Line, that there has been increased riders in that portion. And during rush hour is when we find our uptick in not only riders, but travel times. And so bus is working vehemently to try to increase the number of buses. We like to talk about the wait time for the next bus, but as we know, when we get to particular stations, Ballston, McLean, and those trains unload, we understand that a loaded train, 8 cars, is worth about 15 buses. And so understanding the wait time, even though the buses may be 4 minutes apart, we do understand as a loaded train offloads that we have to increase the number of buses in certain periods of the day in order to carry our passengers to the next station. So we are taking a look at it. And in certain situations, we have several different bus shuttles. We have express shuttles, we have local shuttles, but still understanding as we're trying to get through the area, if we're expressing from Vienna to Roslyn, maybe fine, but the local may not be as conducive to your travel. And so we're definitely taking a look at it and seeing how we can rework our bus system, especially during the rush hour period. Does that help, Sandy?
Yes, that's encouraging to hear. And I hope you can get it sorted out so people aren't frustrated. I know Metro tries so hard, and it's so sad to see frustrated customers and then hear about it in the Washington Post.
Absolutely. And again, understanding the increase in ridership from Ashburn, in it's something that we're excited to see. However, in our shutdown periods, we also have to find a way to move passengers around. So definitely taking all feedback, good and bad, and hoping to improve upon how we are moving our city around the area.
Thank you.
Denise is next.
Chair Calabria, this is Sunny. Ms. Rush is actually, Ms. Rush, I'm going to put your hand down for now. And when we begin the next segment, we'll take your comments at that point. If any other members have any questions or comments regarding the Orange Silver Line, you can come off of mute now.
Well, Nate, that you've been very successful in making your presentation and escaping without any. So we thank you again, and we look forward to seeing you after the summer shutdowns.
No problem. Thank you all.
Okay. Thank you, Nathan.
Thank you, Nate. All right. So Chair Calabria, next would be moving right along the agenda. Next is Mitch Nietzsche and Ronaldo Grimaldi to talk about elevator announcements and the DuPont Circle project. So Mitch, the floor is yours.
Okay, good afternoon, everybody.
I can share the screen, Mitch, when you would like me to do that.
You can share it now, okay, if you'd like. I'll just go through everything we put together for you. Some updates, we just took some high level updates we wanted everybody to be aware of, and then we can take questions. So first thing we wanted to discuss was the escalator availability. So if you take a look at this screen, it'll kind of give you an idea of where we are. Just starting in July of last year through the middle of fall, we were below target, which is 92.9%. But then our escalator availability really began to rise. So April, which is the last reporting for the quarter, was 94.2% escalator availability. And that preceded a high for the year of 94.5, which was the availability in March. So we're making strides. You know, the fleet is getting younger, which is good. And that's helping us maintain the availability. We're also streamlining parts and materials with just a few manufacturers instead of so many manufacturers that we had in the past. And that's also paying dividends in the form of availability. If we move to elevator availability, we're doing pretty well here as well. The target is 97.5%, and that's what we strive for. So everybody knows that 97.5% is availability measured against all outages. So even capital outages, replacements, that it's counted, it counts against the availability. So that's how that's calculated through against revenue hours. And in April, I think was our highest month. So we were hovering around 99% of availability, which is ridiculously high. We've also improved on the elevator mean time to repair. So how the mean time to repair is a measurement of actual time between the time an elevator was out and the very next time it goes out of service. So we're doing well there too. Some of the projects that I wanted everybody to be aware of, the south side, I know everybody wants to know about the north side of DuPont, but this summer, the south side of DuPont Circle, and I put a picture on here. What this yellow arrow is pointing at is a removable concrete slab, and that concrete slab is going to be replaced. When it was installed, it was to allow the equipment for the escalators to be dropped in, but it's no longer needed anymore. So they're going to permanently seal that over. That work is going to happen sometime. We're hoping before July 4th and be done before July 4th. So I don't have an exact start date because they're still working on this. They had to update the scope of work, but contractors should complete that repair sometime before July 4th. So if you see some barricades going up there, don't panic. It's going to be a short-term fix. We're hoping less than a week, but the escalators will remain in service. The next slide is really just a close-up. I was trying to show everybody that white area there is the removable concrete slab. And then DuPont Circle. So the north entrance of DuPont Circle, which everybody is asking, was supposed to start today. But due to procurement issues and supply chain issues, it had to be delayed. We had to put the contract back out. So for the elevator to go with the work to be at the same time to be concurrent with the escalators. So this work is now being moved to December. So December of this year, the plan is to remove escalator number one and the elevator at the same time. The elevator work will be done sometime around May of 2024. That elevator will have the capacity to run four times as fast. So we're looking at increase in speed from 75 foot a minute to 300 foot a minute. And this high speed elevator will reduce travel time and increase ingress and egress capacity. So we should be able to filter more customers both up and down, have smoother travel. And shortly after that goes back into service, one of the new three escalators will be returned to service at approximately the same time. When that happens, the crews are going to begin to replace escalators number two and three concurrently. So escalator number one, when it's renewed, will be running up, and the elevator will also be open and have the capacity to move people much faster than the old elevator. All this work should be done by spring of 2025. So it's roughly about a year it's going to take, maybe 13 months. I don't want to lock in dates just yet, but I can promise you that 13 months and starting in December will definitely happen. Some other highlights and overviews I wanted everyone to know about is we actually just before the meeting calculated that our contractor Kone has now replaced 195 of our escalators in the last 10 years. That is huge. That reduces the age of the fleet, and that that increases our availability to our customers, which is really important to us, and I'm sure is important to you as well. The escalator project at for the entrance escalators at Metro Center will be complete this year. So that will mean in the last couple of years, all four entrances of Metro Center will have new escalators. We are winding down our elevator rehabilitation contract. There's only two elevators left. One is at Largo. The other one is at a non-revenue facility at Brentwood. When that's complete, we are currently outsourcing a new contract to replace another 27 elevators on the heels of that. So very shortly, we'll be starting that contract as well. And where we can speed up the elevators, we're going to speed up the elevators. And that's all I have. So hopefully I wasn't too long and I wasn't rambling, but if you have any questions, Rolando and I are more than happy to answer them.
No, it was a very crisp presentation. Are there any questions from members? Yes, I see.
Yes, Chair Calabria, we have two members, Denise Rush, Steve Kaplan, and then Sandy Newsom, and yourself. Okay, so Ms. Rush, go ahead. Ms. Rush?
Yes, this is Ms. Rush. This might be a travel training, or I don't have a problem with any of the elevators, but at Lafont Plaza, I need someone to meet me there and explain how you get off the at the bottom level, you get off and you want to go to the other side because you need to get to the other side. I don't see how you can get to the other side. And there's no signage. It's not clear to me what to do without paying, you know, without going through the gate again. So I had members of my family here during the cherry blossom time, and they couldn't get to the other side, and I couldn't explain to them because I couldn't understand what was going on. So maybe someone could meet me there, and we set a time, and so it could get clear in my mind, please.
Ms. Rush, this is Carol Lopez. Are we speaking about DuPont Circle?
No.
Lafont, okay. So, Ms. Rush, recently, WMATA has changed the way Lafont, how you transfer to the other side. All you have to do is tap your card out from the elevator and tap your card back in on the other side to get back to the other side. They made that modification because in the past you had to go around in behind the kiosk, go around through a gated area and then go back.
Yeah. In.
But now all you have to do is tap out and tap back in. There's signage that was installed, unfortunately, a little bit after when you probably visited, which was unfortunate, but there is signage, and there's also a button next to the gate where you can call the station manager if you're confused about the process. There is sufficient information now, but I believe that perhaps when you were there, we didn't have that information yet.
Carol, can I ask a question?
Sure.
Because previously, Access Services developed some wayfinding for LaFont. Has this been updated in that wayfinding?
We are working on it. Yes, we have a draft to post. It has not been posted, and that is actually on me because I needed to get different photos to update that. But it is just basically going across the hall, and we will update that as soon as possible.
This is Anu. I may just add that, Ms. Rush, if you're attending the Board of Directors meeting next Thursday, we can definitely go across the street to the station and go walk through the process if you like.
I'll be there. Thank you.
Sure.
Can I add a quick note on that?
Sure.
They are currently in the design phase to put an elevator on the opposite end of that platform to make the transfer much easier.
Great piece of information. Thank you, Mitch. This is Anu again. And Steve, I see your hand is up, followed by Sandy Newsel, Pierre Calabia, and then Philippa. So Steve, go ahead.
Much. That's exciting news about the work on the elevator at DuPont Circle. And I say that from the standpoint of our constituents, because that elevator is about as close to us. That's a critical bus to get people back and forth into the city and out to the Northwest as I think any elevator in the system. And it's you know, it's heavily used, and the timing is perfect because better but right work, if it's implemented, is going to give increased service to at DuPont Circle North Stop, and so the improvement to the elevator is coming at the perfect time. That's all I have to say. Thank you.
It's good to hear.
Next is Sandy Newsel. Sandy, go ahead.
Hi, this is Sandy Newsel. I'm having a mental block, but I think the only line that goes through DuPont Circle is the red line. Regardless, are there shuttle buses that will take people from the previous station to the following station so they can do red line, shuttle bus, red line again?
So I don't believe... I'm not sure if that's the plan. I did not confer with bus before this meeting. The latest update I gave bus was last week to let him know that the project was being moved. So I don't want to speak out of turn on how the shuttle is going to work, but Anu, maybe we can get that information from bus and pass it on everybody.
Hey, Mitch, just to chime in. So again, Nathan Williams, and I normally help with these outages or any major outages that we plan throughout the system. And that is always part of the plan. If we have any understanding our ADA preferences, if we have any elevators out, there is either usually a bus shuttle or a metro access shuttle that will, mainly bus shuttles, that will allow us to carry passengers to the next station. So understanding that the elevator is out at DuPont, we'll probably set up something between DuPont, Farragut North, and if I'm not mistaken, the other location is Woodley Park, but Farragut North may be the location if we're going north because of the close proximity to DuPont Circle.
Thank you. And I really sort of misspoke, and not to go past it, but for people who would need the elevator so to get from the previous station to DuPont Circle area. That's where really what I meant to say. Okay, thank you.
Absolutely. Usually there's messaging going on, and we're working with our customer communications as well to ensure that we get the message out on what station to go to in order to catch that shuttle to or from DuPont, depending on where we need to go.
Thank you.
No problem.
Thank you, Sandy. Chair Calabria.
I have just a historical question. So why don't you ask, have Philippa ask her question.
Hi. Hi. Yes. Hello, everyone, again. I just kind of wanted to do an add-on to Ms. Rush's comments about L'Enfant Plaza. I think that is a nightmare station. I worked down there for years. I was never able to find my way around it. And I finally just started coming out at the one exit that I could find, which was the one across the street from, I think, the Department of Transportation. I still would like to see the station ahead signs on the lower level, because that gets confusing as well. So I just want to say it's a nightmare station, and I'll walk through it with someone too, because I would be lost otherwise. And I know other people that work for Metro that are also, you know, saying they get lost down there. So something needs to be done about that station in terms of signage and better information.
Philippa, this is Carol Lopez again. We're actually looking at wayfinding for that station because of the concerns you have, the committee has shared, and others. So we are working on it, and we will provide you more information as that develops. The environmental design group is working on it, and so we will be bringing you an update. We'll invite them in to let you know what is happening.
All right. Well, whoever designed that had one too many. All right. Thank you.
Mitch, mine's just the historical question. You know, early on, for years, whenever it was raining or snowing, I would go up the escalator at DuPont Circle. And I always wondered why it was left uncovered. I mean, it would be wet, or even with bits of snow on it. And DuPont Circle wasn't the only one. Apparently, Harry Weiss and his design team hadn't thought about putting up canopies over many of these escalators. Do you know what the reason is and why it took so long to begin to put canopies over the escalators?
So I really can't tell you why they did that, but historically, from before even Ellis was created, I know there was talk of a need for covers over the escalators. And it wasn't until 1990 that it was required by code. So anything built before 1990 or that was using the 1990 code wasn't required to have a canopy over it. But now, Rolando may be able to chime in on this, but I believe most of our escalators are covered now. I do know there's even plans for Arlington Cemetery sometime in the early winter to start. So, you know, the federal government and the Parks Department, they love to have their hand in the design of that. Same for Smithsonian. So that's a good thing. These things really, they make such a huge difference. Just that cover, even if it's open air. But I really can't tell you why they opted not to put a canopy system over it when they built it.
Yeah, I haven't looked at my copy of The Great American Subway, which came out, I guess, about 10 years ago. But this is an example, again, of Harry Weiss and the designers of the original WMATA Metro. You know, it took them a court case to install elevators into the subway stations. And the lighting was always low because, you know, that was the aesthetic that Harry Weiss had. Then the question of shelter over the escalators. I still think the WMATA Railroad, that is subway, is the Great American Subway. But those are people who think it's the best and historically the finest. are sadly mistaken. Things we were talking about today, it took so long to correct, and there may still be others. I don't know why L'Enfant Plaza is such a bizarre design for getting around, and I hope our way map that we're developing helps cure that. But these are curiosities that belie the fact that our WMATA metro system is the great American subway. It is, but it has so many flaws, and we haven't finished correcting some of the flaws. But anyway, Mitch, thank you for your presentation. I don't think anyone else has any questions. If not, I guess we can move on. Mitch, thank you for your presentation. Anu?
Thank you.
What's next?
Thank you, Mitch. Chair Calabia, actually, then we have public comments.
Oh, good. Mm-hmm. We're really racing ahead.
We sure are. So if we have any members of the public participating in this meeting, if you have any comments, please tell us now so that we can take the comments. Chair Calabia, we just to state that we did not receive any public comments through phone messages or emails. And I do not see any hands up at this point. So seems like that we do not have any members of the public for public comments.
Okay. Since this is a record, we have almost 45 minutes before the close of the meeting. Does any member have any comment that they would like to make? Or any questions that haven't been raised?
Okay, so we just got two hands up, Amanda Hillman and Sandy Newser.
Yes, thank you. This is Amanda Hillman. I have a question regarding the Better Bus initiative. And I went on the website. I was trying to get some general information about it. And I had trouble. I was trying to find out about the new routes that were going to be put in place. And I know there was supposed to be an app where you can, I guess, trace your route to find out how you would get to certain places. And I guess I was kind of confused a little bit because I know you all were talking about the L12 route that's supposed to be the new route for, I guess, the town center in the Woodmore Town Center. And I didn't see the L12 on the app, or I wasn't able to get that. Now, I did see some other bus numbers. I didn't know if those were just temporary numbers until you get the official names or numbers of the bus routes. So I was just trying to understand, did I miss something? Was I not understanding how it works?
Hi, this is Denise Rush. I went to the Better Bus Network transition presentation that was in Suitland, Maryland, and I gave them four addresses. Woodmore Town Center, I gave them Bonefish Grill, I gave them, I think it was two other addresses in Clinton, Maryland, and the L12 is going to be added on very soon. That you will be able to go to Costco, Copper Canyon, that shopping center. And I think it, if I'm not mistaken, isn't it starting soon? It's starting soon. but they had a presentation in Greenbelt, for the buses, the new buses, but that one is starting immediately, the L12.
You're correct. This is Anu. You're correct, Ms. Rush. And Ms. Hillman, just to clarify, the bus routes that you're referring to are part of the bus service changes effective June 25th. So that is going to be a part of bus routes modifications and changes that's going to be happening as part of the yearly bus route changes. And that's going to be effective June 25th.
Okay.
Yes. And
so
all
if
you have
to get on the app to see where it goes and all of that, so then it would not be included in that better bus app then? Is that what you're saying? Is that why I didn't see it?
That may be a reason why you did not see it on the Better Bus Network information. However, if you send an email to access@wmata.com, I will be more than happy to send you an email with a link about the bus route and exactly how the route is going to be. That may include a map.
Yes, because I know that it was also supposed to connect with at least one of the rail stations as well, and I wasn't able to find out specific information. So, yeah, because I was just trying to share it at a meeting that we had at with the National Federation of the Blind. So I was just trying to get information so that I can share it with them. But you said the address to connect with you is access@wmata.com?
Correct.
Okay. Thank you very much.
You're most welcome.
Amanda, thank you for your question. And it reminds me that the Better Bus Network Redesign group has extended the deadline for making suggestions to them until June 18th. Anu, I just sent that reminder to all the committee members. Could you forward it to Amanda?
Yes.
It includes a link that you can go to make your suggestions or to raise any questions regarding this. And it's really important. Members, I don't know if any of you or how many of you have responded to the survey, but as members of the AAC and the Bus Rail Subcommittee, we really should feel obligated to be among those who provide information on the survey. I know that Denise has, and I have, but I hope that others of you will do the same. You've got an extension now, and we really, as I said, should feel obligated as members of this committee to supply our thoughts or perhaps even raise questions in the survey. Thanks a lot. Sandy, you have your hand up.
Hi, this is Sandy. Two questions or two comments, if there's time, and actually both of them might possibly be better discussed at the AAC meeting. However, since we have time, I'll go ahead with one. We're currently looking for one new member for the AAC. And I'd like clarification on the geographic restriction. Is it Northern Virginia or is it Arlington County? And secondly, I would like clarification on does that person have to have a particular ability, disability, or is anybody eligible, whether it's vision, hearing, mobility, senior, young working person? So that's my first thing, if we could discuss that. And yeah. Any answers?
Yes, we do have a space now, and I thought it was for someone from Northern Virginia, not necessarily from Alexandria or Arlington. Anu, could you answer that question?
Chair Sheehan. Because we do have Mr. Sheehan on with us, I just want to make sure if he would like to make any comments, or would you like me to?
Thanks, Anu. I can start off. Thank you. Sure. And good question. So I'd say the first thing we want to do, well, we need jurisdiction representation, but we want to get in the most qualified person we can get. Person, you know, senior person with a disability. We want to make sure that that they are interested, qualified to, you know, to be a good fit on the committee. Now, we try as best we can to fill the needs of certain disabilities, but we don't have, it sounds a little bit like a quota. We do have areas that we could use certain disabilities in, but really it's a little bit tricky. We certainly want jurisdictional representation. We want disability representation. You know, seniors are good. And so a lot of it depends on who is in the mix and who we have to interview and all of that. So I think in the past we've done pretty well. If you've got, you know, candidates that you're interested in that would like to participate and you think are well qualified, certainly by all means, they have them apply. The more the merrier. And we tend to sometimes lose people because life happens during the year. So it's good to have a pool that we can pull from, that we can that have been vetted and interviewed and all, that we can bring on to the committee. I think we have a good group right now. I'm real pleased with this committee. I think we're doing well on the distribution of jurisdictions and also disabilities. But, you know, we can always improve. Anu?
Thank you, Mr. Sheehan. I see Dr. Posner has raised his hand. Dr. Posner, would you like to?
Yes. Yes, I'd like to address the issue. Patrick did a very nice job. And what we have done from time to time is, if we have an applicant that has a disability that we're short on, or a location that we're short on, and so that may be the deciding factor. And one of the comments that has come from Mr. Calabia is that there is a lack of Hispanic representation on the committee. And one suggestion I would make, and I'm delighted that Doris is on the line, is that the Columbia Pike in Arlington has a very large concentration of Hispanics that ride the bus. And the Columbia Pike bus redevelopment is part of the Better Bus Network redevelopment. And the people that live in that area do use both bus and rail and are Hispanic. And it might be interesting to check the Metro Access records to see if there is someone with a disability using Metro Access that also lives along the Columbia Pike. And Doris, who has volunteered, who has customers in that area, that comes to her, and Mabel at ECNP. So those are just some suggestions. Patrick described everything very well, but that's one area. And, you know, if anybody else has suggestions along with Doris or mine, that would be terrific. But adding someone with a disability from any place in Northern Virginia, any of the jurisdictions, that rides bus, rail, Metro Access, that would be the ideal addition. Thank you.
Thank you, Dr. Posner. Doris, I see your hand is up. Go ahead.
Hello.
You're on.
I am.
Yes.
Okay, I'm glad you can hear me. I wasn't sure. Yeah, I just wanted to say that I actually do have some people in mind, and since I believe we had on the committee one rep from
Alexandria and one rep from Arlington, as well as people from Fairfax County. I think it would be a good idea if we can hear somebody. And I do have a couple of people in mind, but one of the things that I was unsure about, and I think I wrote to ask this question, what is the deadline for this, or is it an open deadline?
Okay.
Because like I said, I want to be able to tell people, and particularly I have a couple of people in mind who are from the Latinx community.
Oh.
So I want to be able to tell them, I don't want them to miss the deadline, is what I'm.
This is Anu. Doris, I'm happy to share that information again. The deadline.
Anu, I'm having a real hard time hearing you.
Okay.
And actually, the some of the people that I have in mind fit exactly what Bill just said. That they have the double. They use mass transit and.
Yes.
I'm increasing the volume of my speaker, so I apologize for everyone else because it's pretty loud for everyone else. I do understand that. As I had responded in the email, the deadline to apply for the AAC membership is June 21st.
June 24th.
Okay. 21. Yes.
Okay, so a week from Wednesday.
Right. Thank you. But I would.
And what time? What time?
5 p.m.
Is it? 11:59.
5 p.m., Doris. And I would highly recommend that instead of waiting for the last day, if somebody is interested, they should send in their application as soon as they can. Because that
of course.
Thank you. So Sandy, just to recap on all the information that you have received so far, and I have just lowered the volume for everyone's convenience. The deadline to apply for the AAC membership is next week, Wednesday, 5 p.m. That would be June 21st. Any member who has disability or a senior uses rail, bus, paratransit can apply. The applications can be emailed. They are fillable online or they can mail. So if they're mailing, I would highly recommend for them to complete the application process sooner and put those in the mail, because those mail process does take some time. And we do want to make sure that
the volume has completely gone back down even worse. At first, you were up, but now you aren't.
Okay. Apologies to everyone. My volume is going to be much higher again. So I was just recapping for Sandy that the application process is underway. If anybody is interested in sending their applications, please do encourage them to send those applications as soon as they can. Once we go through the applications, it is a process to go through the approval. That also requires interviews, and we would like to get this process completed by July Board of Directors meeting. That's being very hopeful, and it's a long process. So I would appreciate all of your support in this process. Thank you.
And I know it can be the candidate can come from any part of Northern Virginia, our jurisdictions, they don't have Alexandria, or they don't have to be Arlington.
That is correct, Chair Karabia. The approval process includes, as Mr. Sheehan said earlier, that yes, we would like to have representation of different jurisdictions within the state. However, it's not just, it's a part of the complete process. Disability and other requirements are also going to be reviewed. So yes, anybody from Northern Virginia can submit their application. Thank you.
Thank you. And if there's time, may I bring up my other point, Tino?
Go for it, sure.
Okay, so again, this is probably something more appropriate at an AAC meeting, but I would just like to raise the possibility that it's been brought up a couple of different times that we need to revisit the bylaws. And I think it would be good for some people to step up and say they're willing to look at the bylaws and see whether we feel anything needs to be updated. I'm sure everybody has a very busy life, but as I do, but I am willing to try to help do that.
Well, thank you, Sandy. I must admit, I've been on, 5 years or so, and in my time, no one has made the suggestion you have. And since the bylaws were done, 5 years, 6 years ago, however, it's overdue for at least reading it over again, if not correcting it where it should be corrected, and seeing if we've been fulfilling the bylaws in the intervening years. But thank you, Sandy, for bringing that up. And I hope that, Patrick, you're chairing the AAC meeting at the beginning of July. You and Anu, I hope, will consider that for the agenda, revisiting the whole question of bylaws.
Right. I think what we want to do, thank you, Tino. Thank you, Sandy. Certainly, I think we need a committee of about maybe 3 or 4 people to go through it. I think we've got some updating that we need to do, and that's important. Perhaps what we can do is establish that committee. I've got a conference that I need to go to end of June, beginning of July. After that, I'll have a lot more free time. And plus, we're off the month of August. So I think we can make some headway during that month also. So why don't we see if we can put a committee together by mid July? And I'll put a note out. This, I guess, being the first, and we'll take about 4 or 5 people who want to work on that and update it and then send it on to the, I guess we send it on to the board, right, Anu, after it goes through you people and on the staff.
Yes, Mr. Mm-hmm. Chairman,
that is right. Correct. Okay, good. It's been so many years. I forgot. Yeah.
Sorry, go ahead.
No, I was going to say, when's the last time we updated it? Was it 2015?
2015.
Mm-hmm. Okay, 8 years.
So
right on schedule.
I see we have Dr. Posner's hand up and Tawan Farmer's hand up. So
right. Okay.
Phil? Unmute yourself, Phil.
Yes, I would just like to remind Mr. Sheehan that if you do new bylaws, you might want to make certain that that does not reset the clock.
Yeah. Are you afraid that we're going to redraft you again, Phil? Yes.
Yes, I am in a different Gainesville. I'm not in Virginia.
Yes.
But just as a reminder, you might want to put in that it does reset the clock or it doesn't reset the clock.
No, it will not reset the clock.
Yes.
Please, Phil, I'm not sure what you mean by it. Did something happen the last time around? What does reset the clock mean?
Well, what it means is the last 3 times the bylaws were revised, then everybody came down to being in the first year on the committee.
Oh, no.
Which is why people like Patrick and I have been on the committee for 10 years, 15 years, 20 years.
25? Yeah.
Yes. Oh. And so it just happened.
Yeah. And of course,
we have had complaints of the public, of too many people for too long periods of time.
Ansel Torres among them.
Yes.
Yeah. And part of that, of course, was the fact that we were dealing with a lawsuit and we had an MOU which expired. And then our reporting requirements went from the general manager also to the board of directors. And so when the board of directors got it, and I think that was back in 2015, that really reset the clock at that time. So all of that, and I will respond to Ansel because he does have legitimate questions about this, that, and the other. But there are also some other things in the bylaws that I think we want to take a look at. And particularly, I think ensuring that we can have virtual meetings, I think, is important. And that, of course, wasn't even available back in 2015. So don't know that we have a lot of, don't know how many revisions we'll make on it. But I'm thinking we have a group of four or five people, and we should be able to get through it, particularly since we have some time in maybe July and August. And we can do that all by Zoom. So I will put a note out to the committee. We'll put a group together. And I'll take names and we'll see where we go. Tino, I think, might have had his hand up also. Want to make sure people are recognized. Thank you.
That is correct. So go ahead, Tino.
Thank you, Anu. This question is actually for, I would guess, Anu or Patrick as chair of the AAC. And it's in regards to the bylaws, since that is the topic at hand. What I'm wondering, in anticipation of this discussion or committee assignment at some point in the next month or so, is just for those who are old and new to the AAC, whether or not a copy of the bylaws can be provided via the AAC listserv, just so that, you know, not only will committee members have it at hand, whether you're on that subcommittee or not, just so they have their, you know, a copy for their own records.
This is Anu. Sorry, Chair Kalabi, go ahead.
It's on the web. It's on the WMATA website.
Am I right? But yes. Anu, that can be emailed to the group, right?
Yes, I can definitely share that again. And sure.
Mm-hmm. Good.
Most appreciated.
Absolutely. Doris, I see your hand is up. Go ahead.
Yes, thank you. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay. I wanted to say that I was involved in the last bylaw committee and would be pleased to serve again. The one thing that I think that we need in this process, based on my recollection of the whole thing, was that when I came in, we came in under a new charter, from the board of directors, and usually in most public bodies, the charter guides the bylaws. So I think we need to see copies of that. And actually, when I was indicating that, I felt that the seat, my understanding was that the seat that Phil was in was an Arlington designated seat because they were called out in the charter. If we can get our hands on the charter from the board secretary's office, it will clear that up. And then also I want to say that in the last round of bylaw committee, it was chaired at the time by Paul Sinelford, and he did the most sterling job. He was so great. So I know he's probably not on this committee subcommittee meeting, but you may want to consider that. He did it so well, and from my standpoint as a blind person, he knew just how to ensure equity and all.
Yeah, if you want to implore Paul, you know, I don't have any. Not sure what it'll take for us to get Paul. That would be good. Yes, you're right, Doris. You did a good job. And I think looking at the charter, that might help.
Patrick, he's not here. You can appoint him.
What's that? Yeah. There you go. He did a fabulous job. And I certainly wouldn't want to hurt his feelings by leaving him out. So,
I think anyone who wants to lean on him is good. I think perhaps also my colleague from Virginia, who is the second vice, would be, you know, helpful in this thing because she's an attorney. Kelly.
We don't often hear from Kelly. No, hopefully she is.
And you could probably get Tappan to come back if you offered him a sandwich. Because he was the co-chair along with Paul the last time they did it.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Okay, this is Anu, and I just want to recap that there would be an email initiation by Patrick Sheehan to do further correspondence about the bylaw. And when Patrick sends the email to all the AAC members, a subcommittee will be created and work on the bylaws would get started.
Well, as Doris mentioned, maybe the charter should be included.
Well, we really don't have a charter anymore. That was the MOU, Memorandum of Understanding, which went out of date. And didn't need to be renewed. It was originally set up secondary to a lawsuit settlement that was done. And so we don't really have a charter.
Which lawsuit?
But I recall that from Kathy Hudgens. That's why I'm asking you, Chick, because that's when the charter was issued. When we became
that was way back when we originally reported to the general manager. And at the time that we moved over to advising the board, there was no longer a memorandum of understanding. And we were told to set up our bylaws by the board. And that's the way we go. It's not a specific charter anymore. There's no MOU.
Oh, news to me. Well, if there are no other suggestions, Patrick, officially, if you could invite people to join this task force, I think that's important for the AAC meeting in early July. So if there's, gee whiz, we still have 12 minutes. I can't believe it. if there are no other suggestions or questions, I'd call for a motion to adjourn this meeting.
Chair,
moved.
Yes. I heard Bill move it be adjourned. Any objections?
I move it be adjourned after Anu makes her announcement about Metro Access meeting on Tuesday and how she can get comments from outside. So that's my motion.
So Anu, please act accordingly.
Thank you, Dr. Posner. You just read my mind for the two reminders. Any members of the public who would like to submit their public comments before or after the meetings can do so via email and or phone numbers. The email is metroaacchair@wmata.com. That's metroaacchair@wmata.com. And the phone number is 202-962-1100. Now that we have completed the AAC and the BRS meetings for this month, the next meeting would be the Metro Access Subcommittee meeting. Typically, that's held on the third Monday of the month. Considering that the third Monday this month would be a holiday, which is Juneteenth, the Metro Access Subcommittee meeting will be moved to the Tuesday of that week, which would be June 20th. And that meeting is still scheduled between 4 p.m. and 6 p.m. via Zoom. Thank you.
Well, thank you very much, Anu. And this meeting is adjourned.
You didn't get a second of my motion.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Anu, this is Ms. Rush. I have a question about July 4th. July 4th is on a Tuesday. Do we have the AAC meeting on the 3rd?
Ms. Rush, this is Anu. The AAC meeting will be held on Monday, July 3rd, yes.
Okay,
July 3rd. Any further questions of Anu? We had a motion to adjourn and it was seconded. Any objections to adjourning? If not, the meeting is adjourned. Thank you, one and all. Thank you. Thank you, Anu.
Good evening. Well done.
Thank you.
Good evening.